On this week's show, discussing how to unlock AI governance and strategy with Mehdi Norbash from Yegatech. In this week's news, deepfakes, projects on hold, Vision Pro for all, and more.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, we're back. Ariel Castillo back on the microphone with me, taking some time away from the true construction innovation time to talk AI with me. What's up, buddy?
All good, man. Thank you for the invite again. It's always a pleasure to join the ConTech Crew.
Hey, man, we got to give it to you. You brought this one to me, man. I love this this whole host ecosystem we have. This one was you, man. So you ready to dive into some AI today?
Yes, man. I mean, definitely. You know, I wanted to have Mehdi on board because we have heard about AI everywhere. You know, construction, it's all about AI now. And I'm like, I know the guy that we can talk about AI, we can grill AI, and he can basically enlighten us when it comes to this technology. So here we are.
Cool. I love a little enlightenment. So Mehdi, you get to be, that's a great intro. Say hi, Mehdi. How you doing, man? Where are you coming to us from?
Great. Hi. I'm calling from San Francisco today. So our office is at Emeryville, California. It's usually sunny, but it's raining today.
Ooh. California getting a little rain. I'm sure they need it, right? Although, you know, it seems like this season, maybe not, but we hope that that just keeps coming through the Sierras and over to us up here for some more of that good snow. We, you know, winter, no, anybody listening knows I love me some snow. So we're going to have an awesome conversation with Mehdi, but before we do, we got to pause for the cause.
Everyone supports a culture of well-being in the field and is equipped with the tools to help prevent suicide in construction. Procore Safety Qualified courses were built in partnership with our customers, elevating enhancements to their standard OSHA training. And the Bringing the Right Mindset series equips individuals and leaders alike with the skills necessary to really build resilient teams. We've made these three courses available for free and on demand, and they're offered both in English as well as Spanish, and they are CEU certifiable. Procore.com/certified-qualified is where we host our Procore's learning portal, and anyone can use their Procore credentials or create a free account to get started.
All right, guys, you're probably sick of me talking about YouTube, so I'm not going to talk about YouTube today. We're going to get a little bit down and dirty and talk about a few things. I need you all to like the show. I need you to subscribe. And I'm going to be honest with you. We're slacking on reviews. You know you love us. You know you want to give all of our hosts, all of our guests a five-star review, especially y'all over on Spotify. We have two reviews. Get over there. Give us that five-star rating. It helps us out, which helps us keep bringing this great stuff to you. And if you think about it, share it with a friend, all right? So like, subscribe, leave us that five-star review. We really need it. We love you guys. Thanks a lot. Back in 2020, I heard about a new software platform called Join. Within minutes of seeing Join, I knew it had the power to revolutionize collaborative project delivery. In fact, I was so sold on Join that I joined the team as its industry evangelist. Many trade shows and podcasts later, Join is now used by 50% of the ENR top 30. Why? Pre-con and ops leaders at DPR, Bolt, McCarthy, Barton Mallow, Clark, and others say that they like Join because it does two big things: collaborative, trackable decision-making, and awesomely simple visuals. Want to learn more about the power of Join? Go to www.join.build/demo to learn about how better gets built. All right, and we're back. Mehdi Norbash. So talk to me a little bit about your history before we get into where you are today. You've got a kind of a rich history in the industry. So let everybody know a little bit more about you.
Absolutely. So I started as a structural engineer. My undergrads was in civil engineering or specializing in structural engineering. I started working as a structural engineer, designing commercial and industrial buildings. And soon I automated most of my engineering tasks with coding. And this is more than two decades ago. And things became really boring. So I talked to my CEO and said, hey, is there any possibility I can go to the construction and build what I design? I said, oh, yeah, you're going to learn a lot. So I went to construction and started building what I designed. And those designs were really, really bad. And that was my design. So I learned from construction that how to design things. And at the same time, there were lots and lots of challenges that we had. We had to train farmers on how to do construction. And after a while, I decided to do a master's degree in construction management. I moved to Georgia Tech doing my PhD in design computing. And that was a time that I was introduced to the world of artificial intelligence. And I realized that how important that is to our industry. When I was doing the master's of computer science back then, a lot of the students, when we were getting to assignments, they wanted to create AI for cats and dogs. This is cat or this is dog. And we're like, no, let's use it in design. Let's use it in construction. And they were like, what are you talking about? So fast forward, I started working at Autodesk, and I was part of a team that created lots of AI solutions for Autodesk in the manufacturing and in the AEC industry. I had my own studio in San Francisco, helping the AEC companies to create AI solutions and technologies. And through that, I started seeing some patterns of why some of the companies are successful in adopting and leveraging AI technology and why some of the companies are failing. And I created a framework in my book, Augmented, and I published a book in back in 2022 and started my own company called Yegatech, and we are helping architecture, engineering, and construction companies to leverage data and AI and build a sustainable future.
It's a great, rich history. I like the fact that we love it when anybody crosses the chasm to the other side to see the results of what they're building. It's awesome to hear an engineer go over and just say, wow, okay, that's really not a good design. We should really think about that. I had similar experiences when I was doing IT. Like you'd do something and you'd get it implemented, and then you'd go out in the field and they'd show you how it's working, and you're like, "Well, that was not intended. Oops, we should rethink that." So a good buddy of mine said, "If you want to know how to do anything, walk a mile in somebody else's shoes." That's why I jumped into software from IT. Because, the VP of development said, look, if nothing else, in 2 years, you'll be one of the best IT guys there is because you'll know how it's built. Little did I know I was going to find this, love for both, which is, sort of been a pain, which is, I think, what then happened to you, right? Then you head out, you get a construction management, you keep going into CS, you realize those two things. It's funny. I've heard this from engineers, architects as well, that get into coding what they did and then looking for other things. In fact, at Join, a couple of the early coders were former architects that just, had done that. So it's a cool little path. I'm interested, in how maybe those three things drive when you look at somebody's IT or technology or AI strategy, how that sort of guides it.
In some ways, I've been there and done that. So I have a deeper understanding of some of the challenges that exist in the industry with regards to AI. Just this morning, we had a webinar around AI governance, and the CEO of a company said, all of my engineers are not really excited about that. And because I used to be that engineer who used to work in design and construction. I know that a lot of people, when it comes to AI in our industry, emotionally are afraid of the technology. And that's because of the fear of unknown. And that's because of the fear of losing control. And that's, you know, until we don't change that, until we don't change their emotion, you're not going to get the adoption. And the technology is being a lot more mature today than 10 years ago, but it's right now is the right time to start educating our people and educating the users of the technology about what really AI is, what it is not, and how it can help them do their work better and faster and in a more efficient way, so that we can move them from the state of fear into the state of excitement.
Interesting. Hey, Mehdi, I like what you were saying about, you know, that journey of emotion. And I would like to know if you can share a little bit of, you know, your own journey. You've been working with AI for so many years. Tell us a little bit about how you felt in the beginning and, you know, throughout this couple of years and how you feel about it now.
Absolutely. So 2 decades ago, when we were developing and using AI technologies, those AI technology, we call them the era of shallow and like narrow AI models. They're very task specific and they can do one thing and it's very easy to break. And then, so that was kind of my, between 2000 and 2012, this kind of was the start of my career and education in this area. And those were the era of, you know, shallow models. And then from 2012-13, when we had more power, more data on the internet, and we had more computing powers, thanks to the gaming industry, and everything moved to the cloud, we started seeing the math, you know, catch up. So we had a better algorithms, and that became the era of deep models. And this is the time that we had deep learning. And through that, we created a lot of new applications. You know, there was a time that we had Siri and Amazon recommendation engine really took off. Google, you know, took off with their deep models. And things got a lot better. We could do a lot more sophisticated things with AI. And, you know, in the past several years, that became the era of foundational model. And these are the models that we can build and we can use it in different, for doing different tasks and completing. So you don't have to retrain it. But of course, you know, it's being built on a massive data set, but it's a lot more capable. And the thing that is very important to understand, and some companies, company executives don't understand it, is that as the capabilities of these models improve exponentially, at the same time, the cost of leveraging AI has reduced significantly. And we are at the really exciting time when we can have access to the latest and best AI technology at a fraction of the cost that we used to 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And that opens up a lot of opportunities for our industry.
That's an awesome like breakdown of AI. Would you add anything? Because that's one of the things. I mean, Ariel, how many times have we had people on and they really can't define it, right? It gets lost. Is there anything more you'd put into sort of defining AI and maybe a little bit of, you know, AI in construction or AEC?
Absolutely. Well, AI is a branch of computer science that has roots in science. You know, think about AI as like a tree. And this tree has roots in science, like psychology, mathematics, biology, and so on. And the branches of the AI tree are different subfields of AI, such as computer vision, machine learning, optimization, robotics, knowledge representation and reasoning, natural language processing, and so on. So in this field of science, scientists try to mimic how human do things, how human acts, how human learns, how human sees. And for each of these, we have a branch of computer science. For instance, how human see is computer vision. How human learns is machine learning. How human act is robotics. So if you kind of I like one of the really old definitions of AI, you know, back in 1981, Barr and Feigenbaum defined AI as computer systems being able to mimic human capabilities. And that is exactly how we do things and we act things. In fact, in one of the illustrations of my book, if I can find it here, and there's some giveaways that we can. So I define AI as being like the tree. And this is one of these illustrations in the book that stay tuned to the end. And we talk about that more.
Well, I was just going to say, I want to steal that, man. We're going to have to get you to copyright that and send it over so we can use it on some slides, because you just broke down AI in one of the most digestible ways that we've heard it. And that's very appreciated, because it's such a, it's become a catch-all and everybody loves to throw it at the end of everything. And thanks to the world of marketing, it's very fuzzy to folks. And it also, you hit, you know, we've been talking about a lot of these over time, computer vision and robotics and large language models. And so it's a super great way to break it down. Ariel, what should we ask Mehdi next?
Now that we know what AI is, you know, the way you broke it down, I want to talk about opportunities for leveraging AI in AEC companies. Can you share any thoughts there? What do you see people adopting? What's the first step? You know, just show us a different spectrum of what can be done.
If you think about creating an AI systems, as I mentioned, an AI system is a computer system that can mimic how we do things, act, how we think, how we solve problems, and so on. There are two main ways that you can create an AI system. One is to model how we think, how we act, how we do things. And, you know, branches like knowledge representation and reasoning, optimizations, these are the branches that we use to model how we, you know, for instance, navigate something or how we think. So we have a graph representation and all of those to explicitly model that. So this is one way, by modeling. And the other way is, if we can model it, do we have enough data that can learn, and then we can learn from the data? So explicitly modeling whatever we want to create. And if we don't have that, do we have enough data to be able to create that model based on the data? So for many years, if you look at the history of AI, when we talked about expert systems in, you know, 60s, 70s, you know, and 80s, optimization, you've been mostly focusing on the modeling part, but the data aspects of it is catching up, because now we have a lot of data, and with all the digitization and everything, we have better algorithm, and this is the branch that is actually getting a lot better. So if you look at the companies that we have, whether it's design company, it's a construction company, or even, you know, working in operation and facility management, anywhere that we have data, we potentially can use or create an AI system to do something. Do something that, you know, mimic how humans do things. We oftentimes, you know, think about that as, what is the problem that you have and you want AI to solve it? And at the same time, it could be that, what are the opportunities? What is your secret sauce? And you can scale that across the organization. What are you really good at, but you can scale it? Because one of the old quotes about AI is that human can do whatever that AI systems are doing, but we can't do it at a scale. So when you think about the opportunities, think about maybe some of the problems you have, and you want AI systems to help solving it, and think about what are you really good at and you want to scale that. So this is kind of two avenues. Another, if you go a little bit deeper, a lot of startups and tech companies been focusing on the operation side of you know, how to operate, and been focusing more on the operation side. Equally, there are more opportunities on the business side and corporate side. You know, for instance, how you can get better projects. What are the projects out there that could potentially be more profitable for you? So if we have all the data and everything connected, you can leverage AI to improve your top line on the business side, as well as you can use AI to improve your bottom line on the operation side.
It's a great breakdown. Do you have any, like, can you give them an example maybe on either side, just that they can kind of sink their teeth into? I'm fascinated by both, so I'm not going to guide you in which way to go.
All right. Absolutely. Let's you know, talk about the corporate side. So there are 10,000 potential projects that are out there. And as a company, which one you want to take on? So typically what happens is that the marketing team or the sales team, so depending on the size of the company, they come up with a short list of, you know, 5 or 10, and then they do their due diligence and pick 1 and 2, and then, you know, they bid and they win and get the project and so on. So AI can help you to, instead of like watching Netflix, there are millions of movies out there and you're not gonna, you know, browse all of those. AI can help you to narrow that big space and propose some projects that could potentially give you the highest return on investment if it is connected to your financial data and is connected to your resources and if it's connected to X, Y, and Z on the corporate side. The technology is there. The technology, you know, when people are like, okay, we want this. The technology is there, but is your data ready? Are they connected? So, and that's the most difficult part. The front end of the technology is ready for us to use, but oftentimes the processes in our organizations are not. The people are not. And our data sets are not. And that's the most difficult part. And often we say, this is like a marathon without any ending. And if you're not running, you're late because your competitors are running. And you can't just wake up one day and say, okay, I'm going to run a marathon. Let's sprint it. It's impossible. You're going to hurt. So you got to start running now.
Yeah, I really dig it. If you guys listen back, we had Will McManus on from DSI to talk about probably what everyone considered a pretty boring subject, which was ERPs and accounting systems and getting all of your financial data together. And 15 years ago, they made a big decision there to bite the bullet and go to a modern ERP and go through the process. And he said, you know, it's going to set us up for the future. I don't think he could have predicted what you just said, but, you know, to those listening, if I heard it correctly, Mehdi, what you're saying is if I have 10,000 jobs to look through, I can find the most profitable based on my own profitability, my own experiences, and my own data to guide me. But the opposite is true. If I don't have the data, it can go tell me there's 10,000 and here's what they are, but it can't really help me with anything at all. You know, that leads to this conversation of why a technology stack is so important on connectivity and availability. It's, you know, somebody will say, well, I'm not going to out them, XYZ ERP system. And I'm like, well, that's one of the hardest systems to connect the data. Yeah, but it's finance. It hasn't changed in years. You know, it's accounting, it's AR, it's AP. And I'm like, actually, it's not. You know, it's much more than that because, you know, we couldn't see this coming. And I'm pretty sure you've put a lot of people, this has put a lot of people behind the eight ball. And so, you know, I love a marathon and you don't sprint. So I don't want anybody, you know, pulling their car over, calling their CFO and telling them to change things tomorrow. But what would be some of those first steps that if you're an organization and you want to be ready, what are some of the first quick steps they can take to kind of align and start heading down a strategy of leveraging AI?
Absolutely. So the first step really is number one, education. Building a foundation for the company. We talked about employees are being afraid of AI, and this is kind of the state that most of the employees are, have. And at the same time, at the executive level, the challenge that we have and we see in the industry is that a lot of executives, if you ask 10 executives about what AI is, you get 15 different answers. And because of that, how can you create a strategy for the company, a robust strategy for the company, if our executives don't speak the same language? So there are issues at the top, there are issues at the bottom, and we're going to address that by having a right and proper education. It's a field that the noise to signal ratio is astronomical. And we should realize that most of the things that we consume on the internet is written by marketing agents for the highest SEO and, all those good stuff. But figuring out which one is right and which one is not is extremely challenging. So you got to start from the education. That's like step one, building that foundation for the company, making everybody excited about the opportunities. Once we have that foundation, then create an AI task force. And the AI task force are a combination of people across the organization and the company, some senior, some junior, and have the AI task force to find AI opportunities for your company. The biggest mistake that companies make is that when we talk about what's your AI strategy, they say, well, Microsoft just released that, and we're going to use Copilot, so as everyone else, that company. So their strategy is more outside in. They look outside, see what's happening, and then they say, oh, maybe we try this and we try that. But what we recommend is your strategy should be inside out. You should look into your business strategy. You should look into where your company is headed. And think about how potentially AI, automation, and technology can help you achieve that. Not only achieve that, help you accelerate that. So if you define your AI strategy the right way, your AI strategy would be the accelerator of your business strategy. And this is what most of the companies are missing today. So I'm going to pause here, Jeff. You're nodding. Tell me more.
No, I love it. You hit on what we always say here, right? Any good technology is an accelerant, but it can run you directly into a wall if that's where you're aimed. And consistently, we talk about getting back to business values, business alignment. Most entrepreneurs and most business, leaders will understand that you have to have a mission, right? You can't be an electrical contractor and chase every bit of work that's out there because it's not the right work for you. You define what type of work you're good at, what type of work you're specialized into, and you get better and better, right? That's why you start fabricating over time. You can fabricate if you're doing something consistently over time and you have the ability to understand the process. This is the same thing. It's just using technology and data to guide it. I absolutely love the alignment. I'm interested to go back to, though, because you hit emotion, and fear is the prevailing emotion right now, because what I believe is happening to some of those business leaders is they're not getting good information from their people because their people are fearful. How do you address that fear and talk about, if I'm accelerating my business, how am I as an AP clerk, field laborer, not fearful for my job by what you're doing and what AI can do for us?
Yeah. So we typically, when we are working with companies, the first step is having a webinar, like 2 hours webinar for the entire company. And we teach all the employees about what AI is, give them some examples of like specific examples of how they can use it to make their life easier. And that's like first step in our engagement. The next step is once we form the AI task force, then we'll have a full day AI workshop with all the executives and the task force. And we take them through a, you know, very rigorous full day workshop and teach them about what AI is, what it is not, and help them to create some conceptual AI solutions for their own company. And they come out of it. So we do always, we do like what, when you think about AI, what are the emotions that comes to your mind before and after our sessions? And 99% of the time, the first one before is fear, anxious, you know, it's about skeptical. And after the workshop and or after the webinar is excited, opportunities, like these are the words in the word cloud that, that pops up. And the question that I always ask in the end is that what changed? So in 2 hours, in half a day, in a full day, what's changed? And the answer typically we receive is that we learned. Now we know what it is and what it is not. And when you know the things, so the fear of unknown will be, is gone. And when you see that you have control, this is another thing. People often think that they don't have control. If you, if I put you with a lion in the middle of a desert, you'll be like, oh my God, it's going to eat me up. And if I put you with the same lion in the zoo with the glass wall in between, you'll be like, oh, that's so cute. That's beautiful. And the reason is that you feel that you have control. The same context, but the moment you have, you feel that you have the control, you're like, okay, I'm cool with this. And this is a call for everybody in our industry that we have the control. If we get the right education, if we know what questions we should ask from the providers, from the employees, then you have a control on how things are being done. And that starts with that education. Getting the right education.
That is an awesome progression of walking people from fear and through that emotion. Those are powerful ways. And knowledge is power. I mean, we've heard that how many times, but I don't think we understand that, not misinformation, but not understanding. I was trying to come up with a better term for it. Creates fear, right? That's mm-hmm. where this comes from. And I love to hear that you focus on the people and taking them through a process to clear them to a place where then they're going to embrace it. Because honestly, until you get your people there, you're never going to reach the capabilities because there's going to be a roadblock.
Absolutely. There was a big consulting company that reached out to us and said, hey, we created this amazing AI system, this much money, that does model-based estimating. So based on all our financial data, you have a model, can predict, you know, how much it will cost. And the estimators don't want to use it. Okay, so why do they want to use it? So you ask like 5-why question. The, you know, big picture story was that the estimators had a fear that they're going to be replaced with AI, with that AI tool. And because of that, they put bad data. Not only they didn't use it,
wow,
they put bad data in the system so that the whole project fails, so that they have the job security. So, you know, when we talk to executives and say, okay, what's your strategy? They said, oh, we had a brainstorming with the executives and these are the two things that we're going to do. I'm like, are the people on board? Oh, no, once we build it, then they're going to test it. And like, no, this is not going to work. Because you got to help them understand what's the value for them. You got to help them to be excited about it.
Yeah, I'm going to throw this to Ariel in a second, but I got to say this. The old adage, if you build it, they will come. Sure, they will, but kicking and screaming and probably blocking you along the way. I mean, to go to your other AI line in robotics, I'll give a shout to our friends at Dusty Robotics. There are two eyeballs on the Dusty robot. to make it look more cute,
friendly,
so that people stop kicking it, because they were kicking it and they were kicking it to screw it up because, again, they had fear. And I love that you hit on estimating, because there is this fear amongst estimators and pre-construction folks that needs to go away. We can't get enough of them. We can't bid accurately in the new way that we deliver projects at the speed we need to deliver without tools like this to do it. We need them to stop counting and doing calculations and start thinking and providing insight and guiding and working as a collaborative team. The tool is no longer the value. The human is the value, the mind.
Absolutely. And I want to add also to all the executives of the company, all the CEOs and decision makers in the company, I want to ask you one question, and I don't want to give an answer, but think about that tonight. What are the incentives that you're putting in place in your company so that people can prepare a better data for your future?
I'm going to throw it to Ariel, but I want you all to sit on that question. And I can tell you right now, that will be, you know, when this episode comes out, that'll be one of my nuggets for sure. Ariel?
Yeah, man. So, you know, picture this. Typically, you walk into, say you're in a conference and you walk in. Typically, you'll see speakers, myself included, talking about the same topic. The AEC industry is working in silos, right? We have the AE team working their ways. We have construction companies, all that. Now, that's the 30,000 foot view. Now, if you jump into the company, the construction company, or any company in the group, now you start noticing that even the same company has silos. So like Mehdi said a moment ago, accounting is working their ways, operations is working their ways, pre-con is also working their ways, and we're not, you know, typically connecting this data. I think it's so interesting how technology can potentially, you know, reduce that gap when you talk about a common data environment. You have BIM, you have other digital tools that are collecting this data. Now, my question to you would be, Mehdi, what would you say to companies in order for them to get started? Like, how do they jump into this data integration, or actually data capturing and also data integration?
So one of the, of course, we don't want to boil the ocean. You know, if you want to, you know, think about your data and data strategy, those should be tied into your AI strategy, which is tied into your business strategy. So think about it. They're all connected together. What our recommendation is typically is, once you define the AI strategy, then start thinking about, okay, now I have three projects or four projects. And in the book, I explain all of these. Now I have a number of projects that I want to start experimenting with. And now, in order to achieve that, how should I prepare my data, and how should I think about my data the other way? Now, the reason I'm saying this is that one of the companies, you know, came to us and said, hey, we have been creating a data lake for the past 3 years, and we spend like $4 million on that. And we have all the data in one place, but nobody can answer what are we using it for or why we did this. And this is classic in our organization, or in the AEC company, because they see something and they think, okay, if we don't do this, we're going to left behind. So let's do it without even having a governance around it. Our recommendation is, instead of just having a lake and putting everything in it, start from a use case that is coming from your strategy, and start experimenting with that and learn from that and take a bigger use case. So as I said, it's like a running. As you run more, you get more fit and you can do more, and starts from there. So again, start from your business strategy, create an AI strategy, and then create a data governance and data strategy that supports those projects in your AI strategy. And that will be your starting point moving forward.
I really like the explanation. Quick question. Define governance. You've been really good at this. So I'm going to jump in, and before Ariel asks his next question, just Define governance for us.
That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah. So
what it is, why is it important, and how do you put it in place?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, it's a set of guidelines that companies need to put in place in order to make sure that they're taking advantage of the AI while they're minimizing the risks. You know, we often say AI is like a fire. You can use the fire to cook a good meal and get all the nutrition that you want. You can also use the fire to burn a house or the beautiful city of Chicago. So depending on how you use it, if you don't have a governance in place, it could really damage your reputation in the industry. So how to make it is, you know, really you got to have that AI governance task force. The reason I always insist on, you know, having a task force is that the front end of AI is going to change, and it's going to change a lot. What we saw with ChatGPT and DALL-E, this is just like the beginning of the AI spring, because now corporations and the government see that, okay, this is going to pay off if we invest more, and they're going to pour their money into this. And you're going to see more disruption in the future. So you need that core group of people in your company to create a strategy, to create a, you know, to manage the risk in your company as the front end of the technology changes. So you create a task force, and the task force will be responsible to create a governance based on based on your company values and also all the risks that the AI solution may have specifically to your company. Sam Zulfagarian, who is my CTO at Yegatech, she's really expert in the AI governance, and that on its own could be another two-hour session that we can talk about.
I think that'll be a conference session. I'm already hearing some conference sessions, some webinar sessions that I think to dive deep, because that's the other part of this is podcasts are here to really wet the whistle and get people kind of going. And with that note, like, I'd love to keep going with you, but I think we're at the point where we can say we've wet the whistle and probably given people plenty to think about. But you have a few resources that people can use outside of this podcast. So, Mehdi, let people know a few things about where they can go find out more before we jump into the news.
Absolutely. So if you go to our website, and I will provide all of this link to you. So yegatech.com, and then from there, you go to free stuff. So these are all free. So in the education tab, it's called free resources. There is a AI workbook that we design for AEC companies. So you can download the AI workbook. It's a free resource for you, and it has all the steps that you need to take to be able to bring AI to your company the right way. So you can download that, and when you're downloading it, just put in the contact crew in the "Where did you hear from us?" We will give away 10 copies of augmented book to your listeners who are interested in the topic and download the workbook. And US only, we had some unsuccessful back and forth internationally. And yeah, that's a way for us to spread the word and help the companies to move forward.
That's awesome. So you guys can go to Yegatech, YEGATECH.com, and go to the free resources and just throw in the contact crew, and the first 10 of you get a free book. And, you know, I knew about this before, so I may get one of those free ones before you guys do.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Mehdi. I'm really actually interested in reading it and looking at the resources, because I think there's just so much unknown. So a good roadmap for people and a good roadmap for an industry to start to grow is a great place to start. So thanks for sitting down with us, and Ariel, thank you for grabbing Mehdi today. I really appreciate it, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you guys know what's next. We got to do the construction technology news of the week. Ariel, what do you got for us, buddy?
All right, man. So really exciting time And, you know, a couple weeks ago, the Apple Vision Pro came out February 2nd, and pre-orders actually went live in January 19th. So I've seen, we don't have the numbers, but I've seen a lot of people commenting about this. And, you know, it's not cheap. The starting price is $3,500. Apple has never mentioned that this is a VR headset or AR. They just call it computational computing. And it is really powerful. It's very interesting. It's carrying its own operating system, the Vision OS. It also has 16 gigs of RAM. It's using Apple's N2 chipset. And if you go on YouTube, LinkedIn, a lot of places, you're going to see so many videos of people just talking about their experience. They're saying that this thing is magical when it comes to representing the reality. It's sort of like showing like if it's an AR headset, but in reality, you know, you can't see through it, but it's mimicking the reality. And they say it's pretty good at it. The object placement, the speed that it's capturing things, how it's tracking your eyes. I mean, it's great. And I think that, it's worth talking about. Some of the pros that I have heard from some reviewers is that the computing is super fast, the haptics, not having to use any controllers, and obviously, you know, Apple ecosystem, pretty integrated. That's great. Now, the cons is the price, again, starting at $3,500. The weight, it's sort of kind of like weird for that distribution, and then the battery life, because you have to attach like a battery pack, and it has a cable to it. So, again, just want to get your thoughts on it, Jeff, and what do you think we go from here?
You know, watching it closely, we needed Apple involved. $3,500, not so bad when I think about, you know, what the HoloLens was and the HoloLens 2 was. And then if you think of, you know, Trimble's XR10, sort of all going in that same space. The interesting part is it's not pass-through, right? It's not see-through. So it is, you know, augmenting reality around you. But, you know, it works really, really well. I actually saw somebody wearing it and didn't have a chance to talk to them, but they were walking through space wearing it. And I was like, wow, that I didn't really think we were going to get there with that one. I didn't think people would be that brazen with it, but they are, because it's doing such a good job of what it's not pass through. That's not the right term for it. But the forward facing cameras are doing such a good job of really, I guess it is pass through technology to the vision as well. Battery life's always a huge thing. Takes forever, for us to get a good battery to where we want it. I'll be interested to see if any of the new computer vision folks or others find a way to use this. I am hearing from a few of our people that it's not quite what they had hoped. But that's always a good thing because Apple will push the envelope. So, Mehdi, I'm interested, you know, just, you know, this fits into that computer vision. It fits into some of the things that we think about augmenting our world. So what are your thoughts on the headset?
I think it's a fantastic opportunity for capturing data in the space. As I think about, AI, that you need three components for any AI solution. One is the computing power, another is data, and another one is algorithm. And I think the headset is a fantastic opportunity to create 3D models and collect data out of the space that people are using it. So I'm really excited about that because I also read some papers on that Apple scientists try to kind of push the 2D limits of Midjourney and create a 3D model. And there might be a gossip. There might be some linking between these at some point in the future.
Ooh, I like that. There are quite a few in the AEC space that are working on, reality capture is huge. So there's an opportunity for one of them to grab this and try to turn it into the ability to get everything. I think of, you know, an open space, a Cupix or an Avier or somebody like that to really lean into it, or maybe somebody I'm not even thinking of, that could do something like that. That's a great idea. I like that. Ariel, anything on that or you got something else for us?
Well, I just want to say that, you know, when people talk about the price, typically they're comparing it to like a Meta Quest 3. That one's, you know, it retails for like $500. They're not the same. It's not the same market. And again, you know, this is Apple's first iteration. So, you know, they probably, we have never seen a product from Apple that their first iteration was a pro version. So that tells you that, hey, they're probably going to come up with something cheaper, but they're just getting started. All right. I have another one for you guys. And this one I'm going to label as Dark AI. So the title says, Meta to add AI-generated label to images created with OpenAI, Midjourney, and other tools. So Meta is trying to work in a way to identify AI-generated images and put a label on them. And this is part of, you know, the company's just getting ready for the 2024 elections, and they want to make sure that artificial intelligence is not threatening the information ecosystem. So in the coming months, you may run into images that will have a label showing AI generated. And we have multiple tools out there. You know, we have Google, Microsoft, OpenAI, Adobe, Midjourney, and so on. So it is real. And we want to make sure that the pictures that are posted out there are real. And if they're not, we just need to put a label on it. So what do you think about that, Jeff?
Well, I think the timing is awesome because we are going into an election year, and it is, let's just be honest, a very muddy world in our world right now. The amount of misinformation, you may remember that, you know, Twitter, X now, and Facebook and Instagram all tried to place this might be a false article during COVID, right? We saw that during COVID where they were trying to identify what they considered misinformation. That was a gray area, right? That is gray in deciding what is someone's misinformation and what is someone's gospel kind of thing. But when it comes to AI generated images, that's a pretty fact-based approach. So I think this is going to be really cool, really powerful, because if we can reverse, if they can reverse engineer it, if anybody can reverse engineer it, it's the groups at Meta and others. To identify this, it will help spread or limit the spread of misinformation through deep faking and other AI generated things that people will believe, because it's, you know, it's really believable these days. So, I also think, Mehdi, this will be interesting to go over to you with too. I think this is actually the opportunity too, where we begin with the end in mind of security and clarity on what AI is really used for and why it should be used and how it should be used. And I think there will be a lot of business opportunities to use this. An easy one is, I'd love to have it running on my email to tell me when somebody's, you know, used ChatGPT to send me yet another email of BS that I don't really want to read, you know? So I'm interested, Mehdi, in your thoughts on the AI generated labels, et cetera.
Absolutely. So I think this is crucial. This is really, really important. And it's a good step forward. And one reason behind it is that if you think about the next generation of something like ChatGPT, how do we gonna train the next version? Is probably from the internet. And if the internet is full of misinformation, then our future technology is misinformed, and in return, all of us will be misinformed. So data poisoning is something that is really big in the tech industry, especially AI, when bad people can poison an AI system with the bad data and skew it towards, you know, making some decisions that you don't want them to make. So we got to holistically, all these big companies, you've got to think about how we can prevent some of these in the future. And this is one step, right, a step towards achieving that.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add to yours there is the internet is full of misinformation. We already know that one. So now we just have to sort out misinformation from real information. And hopefully you hit on something good there. You know, OpenAI was started by a group to go down the path. It wasn't necessarily meant to build what it did build. But there is an opportunity here, I think, as a consortium of some sort to govern and start creating the tools to govern and look for the poisoning and prevent the poisoning, or else, you know, Terminator would happen. You know, if we don't stop it, you know, somebody can guide it. Well, Ariel, that's a good one, because I want to segue this into mine, because people are like, oh yeah, misinformation. Well, I'll just, you know, read up. Well, here's a good one, because this is from CNN. It's finance worker pays out $25 million after video call with deep fake chief financial officer. So many of you and all of us discuss, you know, that you have to have governance in place in your financials and checks and balances and pick up the phone and talk to the person. Well, this one gets real bad, because a finance worker at a multinational firm was tricked into paying $25 million to fraudsters using deep fake to pose as the company's chief financial officer in a video conference call. So this was a very elaborate scam with a company with a lot of their leadership, a lot of people out in the public. So a lot of areas to grab representations and create the deep fake. So the worker first got an email, thought it was probably BS, went through the right thing to get together in a video call, and was on a video conference call, and everyone, it wasn't just with the CFO, everyone on the call was a fake. And they went through the process, and he released $25 million or 200 million Hong Kong dollars, about 25.6 million over to the fakers. So this is the reality of what technology like this can be used for if we don't have systems that can help us prevent it, but also checks and balances. $25 million being released should have gone through, I would hope, a number of independent checks and balances to get approval. I'm just interested, Ariel, did you think we'd see this fast?
Man, you really took it to another level when I said dark AI. So this is, you know, I am surprised. I have heard about things like this, especially with phone calls. They'll capture your voice from YouTube videos or something, and they'll call families and they'll ask for money. But, you know, $25 million, man, this is insane. And then through a video call, I don't know, man. This is, you know, this is why probably people are scared. And this is why we probably need a lot of education and try to get people to understand, you know, how this works. Betty, what are your thoughts about this one?
Yeah, so this is a tough one. Don't trust AI systems and verify whether they're AI systems or not. You know, one of the things that humans often do is one of the biggest problems we have is over attributing or over relying on the machines. And in this case, you know, the AI system. And this over-reliance is a big issue, regardless of, you know, what happened with deepfake. And in this example, in our, you know, architecture, engineering, construction world, because at the end of the day, AI is not going to stamp the drawing and everything. The engineers do. And we got to really educate the people on, you know, what are the limitations of AI, and also how not to trust and over-rely on them. Because if we do without verification, we always say, you know, trust, then verify. This is actually the opposite. Verify, 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 verify. Maybe trust. Because you got to always think about, you know, how this technology can also fool you at the same time. And that's very important to have in mind. And communicating that from the executives to the employees so that they have a better understanding of the technology. And like any other tool, it has capabilities and it has, you know, risks that involve, and we got to manage both of them at the same time.
Yeah, you hit on a couple of things. One, you hit it earlier. We have to be and know that we're still in control, right? And so when you have an AI task force, like you talked about, Mehdi, and you implement a strategy, you have control over that strategy and you have controls and checkpoints and things that you should be doing. So these are very separate because I don't want people to be scared about using the technology inside because it's a much different, much more well-baked, controlled environment when you're doing it yourself and you're creating your own governance and your own strategy and you're deploying your own tools. This is more about, you know, where this world can go if we're not careful. But it's also a human problem. You said it. You know, trusting that at a single point of failure is a bad idea. So verify, trust. I like that instead of trust, but verify, you know, verify and trust when it comes to financials for sure. So just an interesting spin. You know, I'm going to take us to another one though. All right. And my next one is using AI. Again, imagine that. But this one comes from my favorite new email, Tech Brew. So if you've heard me talk about Morning Brew and Tech Brew, these are places that I go get news from outside of the industry. But who knew? Be talking about a lot of the things that we think about here. So, you know, Mehdi talked about it earlier with robotics. So Aurora exec Nat Buse explains why 2024 stands to be a big year in AV, and that's autonomous vehicles. But this is the autonomous trucking company. He's their chief safety officer and a former NHTSA official. And he spoke to Tech Brew about the big year coming up for the company. And this is really cool because Aurora has planned by the end of 2024 to remove people from their driverless trucks. So they've been going through the process of having a person in there, of building out their infrastructure, of building out their technology. They've taken $820 million in funding. So you think about tech startups in our world, and then you think about tech startups in this world, that's a very, very big difference in the amount of money. But we're talking about, you know, the safety and driverless vehicles out on our roads, but it is coming. If you look at our supply chain, if you look at trucking, they are ahead of us when it comes to a people power issue. They just can't get enough. And it's not like we're not using more of it. So, you know, but this is really cool because basically they've talked about he's their chief security or safety officer. They talk about how they've made their entire robotics safety framework available to the industry and available for everyone to share so that it can get better because there have been a couple of incidents lately. Cruise Robo Taxi right there in Mehdi's world in San Francisco had some issues that were related back to technical failures. So, you know, it's not without its problems, but this is the year that they plan to get driverless trucks on the road. I'm just interested, Ariel, how do you feel about going down the road and looking over at a truck and realizing there's nobody in there?
Man, I mean, that's a dream. I honestly, I know it's probably going to be a lot of anxiety in the beginning, but once we get used to it, you know, it's a big vehicle, man. It's driving fast. But once we get used to it, it's just going to be, you know, part of the day to day. I don't want to drive, to be honest, man. It just eats so much time out of my day. And I want to be able to do the same thing. So if we can do it with trucks, I believe that we'll be able to do that, you know, regular cars as well. There's a lot of work that has been done, but the reality is that regulation is going to be key there. It doesn't matter what technology we have. If regulation is not up to par, we're not going to be able to say, hey, I have a robotaxi here.
I think you're right. But what I challenge here on this one, Ariel, is that the computer never gets tired. The computer never stops paying attention. The computer never looks at their cell phone. And that is quite common. And we can slow trucks down and still be more productive in a driverless situation for that same reason. Drivers of trucks must keep books, must get off the road, and must limit the time in which they can be behind the wheel safely. And those are things that when you're looking at, you know, logistics and planning, it's also, you can't know, right? That when the person's going to get tired, how long before they're unsafe on the road. But we can know that with computers. We can know that with algorithms, and we can be more predictable. And we talk about this in the AEC world. I don't care if it's a day later, if you can be predictable that that is the day, then I can build a schedule around that. So logistics systems, et cetera, can start to build around that. We can use other algorithms to start to build much more robust supply chains. You know, if you start to think of large grocery or common goods like a Walmart, right? If Walmart can start to understand in what areas through the data is, you know, what products are being consumed on a regular basis and start to predict what they need and start to move their fleets there and adjust their shipping, they can be more efficient. So there's an efficiency factor to this. So Mehdi, I'm interested because this goes all right up your alley on how you roll all this stuff together.
Yeah, absolutely. So on one side, this is exciting. You know, these are the things that we need. And you know, I'm really excited that, you know, us US is driving this forward, because there are lots of other countries that also working on this at the same time. And that's really exciting, and we need it. At the same time, you know, Ariel talked about anxiety and safety and concerns like that, which is absolutely understandable. One thing that, you know, I talked about is that these AI systems are learning from the data. And in driving, there's always that edge case that this truck or this vehicle hasn't seen. And those edge cases sometimes are problematic. It was a networking event in San Francisco, and I met a very bright and young engineer. I said, what do you do? He said, oh, I work for this autonomous company, car company, and all I do is create edge cases. So the Tesla who went in the middle of a white truck on the road hasn't seen any white truck on the road. So he thought, okay, what is this? I haven't seen this. Okay, I'm going to go through it. But that was a big truck that was, you know, falling off. Or, you know, in San Francisco, you see that at some point, maybe a couple of years ago, the self-driving cars just stay behind the steam that comes out of the piping system, because they thought that maybe this is a human or something, so I have to stop here. So as exciting it is, at the same time, there are some edge cases that is unknown. And what I like about that kind of like open source platform is that we can put all of our data into a system that could be used to make this safer and better, so that we can make the industry a better industry with less truck drivers, since we don't have them in the future.
Yeah, it's not removing them. We just don't have them. Well, that was an incredible episode. I had a whole lot of fun. Mehdi, thank you so much for sitting down and braving through the news with us. It was awesome to have you today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Ariel, thank you, man, for bringing Mehdi on and coming on the show as always and bringing so much great articles, et cetera, with us, man. Thanks.
Hey, Jeff, again, really happy, and I'll see you on the next Contact Crew, man.
That's right. And thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Mehdi Norbash. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontactcrew.com. This is the Contact Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.